So today we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 19, text number 151. This verse actually is a very famous verse, and it's almost all of you may know this verse by heart. It's a very nice and wonderful verse. So please repeat after me. Brahmanda Bhramite Kondam Bhati Bhanji
Brahmanda Bhramite Kondam Bhati Bhanji
Guru Krishna Prasade Paye Bhakti Lakabi
Guru Krishna Prasade Paye Bhakti Lakabi
Brahmanda Bhramite
Brahmanda Bhramite
Wandering in this universe
Wandering in this universe
Kon
Kon
Some
Bhagyavan
Most fortunate
Most fortunate
Jiva,
Jiva,
living being,
living being.
Guru,
Guru,
of the spiritual master,
of the spiritual master.
Krishna,
Krishna,
of Krishna,
of Krishna.
Prasade,
Prasade,
by the mercy,
by the mercy.
Paya,
Paya,
yes,
yes.
Bhaktilata,
Bhaktilata,
of the creeper of devotional service,
of the creeper of devotional service.
Bija,
Bija,
see. Translation Prabhupada by Divine Visitation Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. According to their karma, all living entities are wandering throughout the entire universe. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary systems, and some are going down into the lower planetary systems. Out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of devotional service. Perfect. When we speak of Brahmanda, we refer to the whole universe, or to the cluster of many millions of universes. In all universes, there are innumerable planets, and innumerable living entities upon those planets, in the air and in the water. There are millions and trillions of living entities everywhere, and they are engaged by Maya in suffering and enjoying the results of their fruitful activity life after life. This is the position of the materially conditioned living entities. Out of many of these living entities, if one is actually fortunate, Bhagyavan, he comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master by Krishna's mercy. Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, and if one desires something, Krishna fulfills one's desires. If the living entity by chance or fortune comes in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement and wishes to associate with that movement, Krishna, who is situated in everyone's heart, gives him the chance to meet a bona fide spiritual master. This is called Guru Krishna Prasada. Krishna is prepared to bestow his mercy upon all living entities, and as soon as a living entity desires the Lord's mercy, the Lord immediately gives him an opportunity to meet a bona fide spiritual master. Such a person is fortified by both Krishna and the spiritual master. He is helped from within by Krishna and from without by the spiritual master. Both are prepared to help the sincere living being become free from this material bondage. How one can become this fortunate can be seen in the life of Srila Narad Muni. In his previous life, he was born of a maidservant. Although he was not born into a prestigious position, his mother was fortunately engaged in rendering service to some Vaishnavas. When these Vaishnavas were resting during the Chaturmasi period, the boy Narada took the opportunity to engage in their service. Taking compassion upon the boy, the Vaishnavas offered him the remnants of their food by serving them, By serving them and obeying their orders, the boy became the object of sympathy for the Vaishnavas. And by the Vaishnava's unknown mercy, he gradually became a pure devotee. In the next life, he was Narada Muni, the most exalted of Vaishnavas and the most important guru and acharya of Vaishnavas. Following in the footsteps of Narada Muni, the Krishna consciousness movement is rendering service to humanity by giving everyone a chance to come in contact with Krishna. If one is fortunate, he becomes intimately related with this movement. Then, by the grace of Krishna, one's life becomes successful. Everyone has dormant Krishna bhakti, love of Krishna. And in the association of good devotees, that love is revealed. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 22, 107. నిత్యకృష్ణ ప్రేమ సభ్యకరుణాయ శ్రవణాది శుద్ధ చిత్త కరుణయోదాయ. Dormant devotional service to Krishna is within everyone, simply by associating with devotees, hearing their guru instructions, and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Dormant love for Krishna is awakened. In this way, one acquires the seed of devotional service. Guru Krishna Prasad by Bhakti Lata. So, this verse is very powerful. It was quoted very often by Srila Prabhupada. One of them, you could say, possibly one of the top 30 verses, top 40 verses that he quoted. Because this verse shows the rarity of devotional service. It shows the good fortune of someone who's come to the path of Krishna consciousness. This verse makes us realize not to take this good fortune lightly. In other words, not to take Krishna consciousness in a frivolous way, in a way where we feel that it's ordinary, it's something which is a side phenomena. It makes us realize that wow, that it is only by great fortune, by such good fortune that one comes to this Krishna conscious movement, and one gets the opportunity to associate with the spiritual master, to associate with Krishna. So this verse is actually a very simple verse in terms of the Sanskrit itself, or the Bengali, and each word is very significant. It's very full with meaning, and so we could just go word by word through this verse and discuss the various points. And this is what Srila Prabhupada also is doing in the purport. He's going taking every word and explaining it. So the verse starts with Brahmanda Pramite, meaning that Brahmanda means this universe, right? Brahmanda. Or it can also refer to the whole material cosmic shell, you could say. So all these millions and billions of universes. So the universe, the material universe, is not a small place. Right? This is one point that the scriptures make. It's not just the earth planet with a few planets revolving around it, as some people may have believed in the past. It's composed of billions and billions and trillions of universes. So this is the entire Brahmanda. And the living entities, it says the living entities are sarvagata. In other words, in every place there's a living entity. In fact, nothing in this material world can actually exist unless there's a living entity there. Nothing, for something to exist, it needs a perceiver, it needs a soul, it needs something spiritual. So, in every, in every inch of this universe, there's a living entity. So, even in this, in this room, or in this, just on the palm of my hand, there's millions and billions of living entities. So, essentially, what this means is that there's an infinite number of living entities. It's infinite. Krishna's infinite. And his energy, where his margin of energy, is also infinite. There's no end to the living entities produced by Krishna. So, when I read this, I felt a great sense of meaninglessness in life. I was thinking, you realize this, that we're so small, we're so insignificant. Right, and there's trillions and trillions and trillions and billions of living entities. We can't actually imagine that number. And this is what the scriptures tell us, that there are so many living entities. And then you have the spiritual world, it's also full of living entities. So one may wonder that, what is my value? In the sense that there's so many living entities. What does it matter what I do, or what I say, or what I don't do, or, the service that I perform to Krishna? What does it matter? I mean, it's like, I'm just so insignificant or so small that we wonder that maybe Krishna even notices us. So this is very difficult in the sense that it was like one of the times I experienced depression in my life. I got, what is this? We're just so many living entities. But we need to remember that Krishna also is infinite. Krishna is also unlimited. He's infinite. There's no end, no limit to Krishna. So, our relationship with Krishna and our importance, you could say, to Krishna is as important as if there were just 10 living entities in the material world. In the sense that if there was only 10 living beings, right, we have this experience in this in our life that any normal human being can have a close relationship with up to 7 or 8 people. Right? This is like our limit. They've done studies on this. They say even the president of the United States or some country, he's the president of such a big country, but still he'll be dealing really with only 7 or 8 people. He has 7 or 8 people that he deals with, and those people deal with those people. So like that, they give big speeches and there's thousands of people there. But in terms of their relationships and things like that, like any other normal human being, they deal with only that many people. So when we have 10 people, we feel that, oh, I get some special attention. Like me and 10 other people, those people may feel some special attention. Now, because Krishna is infinite, these infinite living entities, he's as personal, and he feels that as close to them as we would feel to 10 living entities. That's the, you could say, the closeness of that relationship. So even though there's an infinite number of living entities, that our position is still of great significance. We still have a very significant place in the spiritual world. We have a very significant role to play in our service to Krishna. And we're very important to Krishna. Krishna cares about us in that way. So all these living entities are wandering in this material world. Right? And then this verse is saying that Gauram Bhagyavanji, then some fortunate living entity, right? Some living entity among these many billions of living entities, comes in contact with Guru and Krishna. So the word here that is used is Bhagyavan, or fortunate, Bhagyavanji. Who is this fortunate living entity? And what is his fortune? Guys, his fortune is that he comes in contact, he or she comes in contact with the spiritual master and with Krishna. So some living entity gets this opportunity to associate with the devotee of the Lord. So this verse is not exactly saying that it's our fortune to associate with the devotee of the Lord. It's saying even a more basic one. It's saying that some fortunate living entity, so that person is already fortunate, and that fortunate living entity comes in contact with the devotee of the Lord. It says, Pramanda Kramita Gona Bhagyavanji. Which fortunate living entity is there? Who comes in contact with a devotee of the Lord? So coming into contact with the devotee is a matter of great fortune. So it's saying only a fortunate living entity gets this opportunity to actually meet a devotee of the Lord. So then one may ask, the question is this now, that Srila Prabhupada discusses in his purport, and that our different acharyas discussed, is what makes a person fortunate? What is the cause of this fortune that a person comes in contact with a devotee? So we have so many exalted devotees going out on Sankirtan, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. We have different people who were able to meet Srila Prabhupada directly, who were able to meet other his devotees. So why does one living entity come in contact with that Sankirtan devotee who's on the street distributing books, and another living entity doesn't? This is the question I'm asking. What inspires, what inspires the devotee who's distributing books to turn left rather than right? And then that devotee meets a devotee who's on the left, a person on the left side of the road, and they happen to meet. That person receives the book and then he becomes a devotee. But what was that fortune that caused that initial contact? Is it just good luck? Is it like winning a lottery? Is this what Krishna consciousness or Krishna's mercy is about? That like we go and we win a lottery and we get a million pounds or something. So this is like the Krishna lottery. It's the biggest jackpot you can win. You know, you become fortunate, and sure enough, it's just good fortune that's on this, and then you come in contact with a Krishna's devotee. So it's Srila Prabhupada discusses this briefly in his purport. He discusses it starting the point of meeting a devotee. But in one very nice book written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Darshan Mula Tattva, Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses, asks this same exact question, this very question. He's asking, what fortune leads a person to meet a devotee? What is meant by good fortune? If good fortune is a cause of mitigation of our attachment to family and material existence, then why is saintly association or resolute faith expounded as being the real cause? Good fortune is a matter of luck, blind, inexplicable phenomena. If this is the only source of the jiva's ultimate benediction, then he becomes disinclined and unmotivated to act on his own. Though this topic is ostensibly simple, explicit formulations are required, and hence it calls for serious attention. So then, after that, he starts answering. He says, after the jiva enters the jurisdiction of maya, the time when the results of all the activities he has performed are ripe for fruition is called bhagya, or fortune. Unlike the atheists, the theists understand that bhagya, fortune, is not accidental. The jiva's bhagya is the result of his actions. And there are two types of results, material and spiritual. Material results beget mundane fortune. Spiritual results reward spiritual fortune. All those activities which were executed with spiritual goals in mind, like serving a Vaishnava saint, chanting the Lord's name, and worshipping the Supreme Lord, are all spiritual. Whatever the attitude may have been while these services were being executed, they will generate a devotional fervor that will in turn inspire a sincere tendency to devotional service. So here he talks about bhagya, or his good fortune, as a result of our activities. And some of these activities are spiritual activities, some are material activities. So our spiritual activities, some of them may be serving Vaishnava, chanting the Lord's holy name, worshipping the Lord, all these different activities. And then, the conclusion is that the accumulation of many lifetimes of pious activities, sukriti, rewards one good fortune, bhagya, which imbues the heart with faith, shraddha, and respect for saintly souls and their association. This shraddha, faith, gradually produces faith in devotional service and chanting. Eradication of unwanted material desires in the heart, steadfastness in devotional service, taste for it, and love for Krishna. So this is the important sentence that I want to focus on. That he says, the conclusion is that the accumulation of many lifetimes of pious activities, sukriti, rewards one with good fortune, bhagya, which imbues the heart with faith, shraddha, and respect for saintly souls and their association. So, we know that many people met Srila Prabhupada, right? Many people heard his lectures. But not everyone sitting in that audience immediately became a devotee. Right? Some of them immediately took to Krishna consciousness, and others, you know, there was going to be some delay. You know, they weren't completely ready, even though they met Srila Prabhupada. Similarly, a Sankirtan devotee may go to so many people, and may meet so many people, but out of them, not everyone may take the book. One person may take the book. So, it is saintly association only that brings us to Krishna consciousness. Right? It's only saintly association that actually awakens that love of Krishna. But one attains that opportunity of association, and one is able to respect that association or take advantage of it by, here he's saying, by sukriti, by pious friend. So he's saying that what is written here as fortune, as bhagya,
doesn't exactly mean luck. Point is that this isn't like the atheist. He says only the atheists believe in pure chance. He says this doesn't mean just good old chance that we meet or we take up Christian consciousness. No, fortune means that this fortune is manifesting finally from the pious activities of our previous lives. So when one is pious, when one is interested in Krishna, when one is starting to become interested in some sort of spiritual life and performs these pious activities, then gradually his sukriti develops, pious credit develops, where that person becomes more open to that Vaishnava mercy, where one is given that contact by Krishna, by the grace of Krishna, of that devotee. And there's so many examples, examples of devotees in our movement like this. Just like I knew one devotee in Ireland who was a devotee who became a devotee, and he said that before this, before becoming a devotee, he was under intense intoxication. He was drinking a lot and going partying every night. And he continued this for a few years. And then one night he was really bad. He took some intoxication, some drugs, and he was really on this all-time low. And then he said it was the only time in his life, and the first time in his life, he sincerely prayed to God. He said that he never believed in God. He said, if there is a God out there, if you're out there, then please help me. I'm really now desperate. So I don't know if you're out there, but if you're out there, then please help me. And he said that the next day, the next morning, he received a book from a devotee on the street. The next day, he got it like that. So, so there was some, some desire there as well, that Krishna's not an unjust God, that some people win the lottery and others don't, some people get the association and others don't. He's also looking at the sincerity of the soul. And therefore, he will actually arrange the meeting of that soul with the devotee. And this is why so many times the devotees go out in Sankirtan, they pray to the Lord, right, that please send sincere souls, please, it's really up to you, please send sincere souls. Why? Because not everyone is at that point, at that moment, where will they immediately take to Krishna consciousness. And Krishna, when he's happy with the devotee, and when he's happy with the soul, he will send those souls to that devotee to be liberated from them, receive Krishna's mercy from them. So this is bhagya, this is good fortune. This is that bhagyavan is someone whose good fortune is manifesting now due to some effort on his part as well. Also good fortune is also there, but also some effort on his part. And due to that effort, he's receiving that association. Due to that sukriti, he's receiving that association of the devotee. And therefore piety is important. Right, Prabhupada, he emphasized in so many lectures, he said, become pious. He said, become pious. Piety is an important principle in human life. The coward boys who are associating with Krishna, the Krishna book describes that how these associates of the Lord became associates because they had accumulated heaps and heaps, it says, heaps and heaps of pious activities over the course of many lifetimes. Right? They were, they got this opportunity. Of course, the ultimate piety is love for Krishna, is Krishna consciousness. But it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada uses that word piety. He says that they accumulated heaps of pious activities, and because of that, they attained the association of the North. So now, having said this, so this is bhagyavan. We said this isn't by chance. Krishna is a just Lord. He has some way of deciding who gets the association of the devotee. So having said this, we also say, the other side is also that we say that there's something like causeless mercy. That some souls, we say that we receive Krishna's mercy, not because we earned it, but because it's causeless. Right? We beg for causeless mercy. So then we naturally ask, well, what is this causeless mercy? And how does Krishna is cause this, but how does Krishna decide to give this cause this mercy, and why hasn't he given me this cause this mercy? If this cause this mercy is there, so we also have this idea of cause this mercy. It's also the case that there is real cause this mercy, and that someone without any piety, without any pious credit, can be liberated by the grace of the devotee and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That also is there in our movement, in our philosophy and in our movement. We should not take this cause this mercy lightly, that, oh, well, no, there's some piety there, and that's how Krishna decides who gets this cause this mercy. No, because that's limiting Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That would be an offense to Lord Chaitanya if we said that there's some reason why his mercy is there, or that his mercy is not completely causeless. Causeless mercy is also there. And we find that in the case of when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on this planet 500 years ago, that he, the Chaitanya Charitamrita clearly says, he liberated the entire universe. It wasn't just India. He liberated the entire universe. And he did this by liberating the people that he met himself. Whoever he met, they immediately were full of love of God. And also, at that time, he didn't travel outside of India. So how did he liberate the entire universe? What to speak of Earth? What to speak of the universe? How did he liberate the Earth? It said that he inspired different devotees in different places at that time with this amazing power. And they, in those places, liberated all the people around them. So that statement also is literal. At that time, the entire universe was liberated. Now, because there's an infinite number of living entities, it fills up again. So we're part of the next batch. But he liberated all living entities at that time. And it's not that all those living entities had some pious karma, they deserved it at that time, and that's why they were liberated. No, they were liberated simply by the causeless mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one may say, well, this is unfair. Why is it that those living entities at that time received liberation, but I didn't at this time? But no, this isn't a problem. Because Krishna, the way he set up this material world, he has some general rules. It's like there's some general rules. This is how you attain the Lord. There's some struggle. We have to do punya. We have to beg for the mercy of the Lord. Then you get the mercy of the Lord. But sometimes, to show his power, to show his mercy, and just out of the sweetness of his heart, Krishna decides, Lord Chaitanya decides to come and liberate whoever he sees. So this is like some people, they get lucky. This is like some very well-to-do, exalted person, very rich person comes, and for some reason likes someone and decides to give that person an immense amount of wealth. Just for no reason. So that's freedom, right? That's free will. We have that free will. Sometimes we love someone for no reason. It's just our free will. We attain a liking for that person. Or sometimes we decide to do something good for another person just out of our free will. So Krishna also has free will. We can't deny him that free will. The Lord will have free will, but Krishna, you have to follow all the rules. That he can only follow, that he, has to, follow all these rules. No. Krishna has that prerogative, being a free agent, being a free person, that when he wants, when he gets intoxicated with love of God, he can make completely unworthy persons full of love of God. There was no other qualification other than his mercy. And so bhagya can mean good fortune as a result of our pious credit. This is the general case, this is the normal case. And sometimes bhagya can mean just real good fortune. It's just that it's the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Now, when we ask that, well, why does Lord Chaitanya do this always? Why doesn't he just always stay in the material world and constantly liberate all living entities? So, this is a very good point. It's like, well, why doesn't Krishna just stay for Lord Chaitanya could stay at least for 1,000 years, I mean, if not always. The reason is because Krishna doesn't want us to take love for him cheaply. This is it. If we, you know, make this mistake, we leave Krishna, we turn away from him, we come to the material world, and then suddenly, you know, before we know it, we're just back in the spiritual world. You know, it's just like, wow, you know, this is really good. You know, we just leave Krishna, and once in a while, we fall into the material world, and then within a few seconds, we're back in the spiritual world again. You know, associating with Krishna. No, Krishna doesn't want us to take love of God cheaply. He wants us to take the material world and to take our mistakes seriously. And so sometimes he may do this. But because this isn't the norm, you may say, even the living entities who get this causeless mercy, they take it very seriously. Because they know that, well, this isn't something ordinary. You know, I really receive some mercy. That's why I receive this liberation. Because once you're in the material world, it takes a long time to get out. You know, this is the whole process. So Krishna also has this task, the material world has this task of being made in such a way so that we don't make this mistake again. And if Krishna, and if love of Krishna is made too cheap, we will, you know, make this mistake again, we'll fall down again. But the material world is so perfect, it's perfect for its purpose, in that once we go back, we never make that mistake again. So Krishna is ensuring that, he's ensuring that we don't take this cheaply. Then the second reason also is that Krishna respects our free will. And so he also, if he just liberated everyone, then there would really be no meaning of turning away from Krishna. Right? We wouldn't have a choice not to worship Krishna. You know, we have that choice to be rebellious from Krishna. We have that choice to come in this material world and turn away from Krishna. So that's the, you could say, another reason. So in some cases, Krishna goes against our free will. He decides, you know, I'm just going to pull this soul out. And then once he's happy, you know, he receives liberation, he will know that I want this. But in general, Krishna will, even in the case of bringing us to him, of course he respects our free will when we want to leave him, right? So if we choose to leave Krishna, he sends us here. But also, in coming to Krishna, he doesn't force us to come to him. He wants us to come to him out of our own free will. So this is why Krishna always, you know, Lord Chaitanya, you know, he always doesn't do this, because he lets the souls struggle a little bit and desire his service. And now this causeless mercy is not limited just to Sri Lord Chaitanya or to even to pure devotees like Srila Prabhupada. We also, any devotee can also be a vehicle of causeless mercy. In other words, someone may not have punya. Someone may not have, you could say, in the normal case, would not come to Krishna consciousness so easily, or may not come in that lifetime. But if a devotee becomes very determined to bring someone to Krishna consciousness, that person can expedite that process. That person can actually, you know, pull that soul closer to Krishna. We find so many devotees like this, right? The husband or the wife join Krishna consciousness, and the husband isn't so interested in becoming a devotee. In fact, the husband is very inimical and is, you know, doesn't absolutely want to become a devotee. But then all the other devotees and his wife and everyone, you know, get on his case and they try to bring him to Krishna consciousness so many ways. Like, they just like force him to become a devotee. And that person ultimately has to become a devotee. It's just like, you know, it's in his face and all the time, and the philosophy is explained to that person, and that person somehow, by the mercy of the devotees, comes to Krishna consciousness. We have this case in our temple in Boise. There's that one family, and the wife, she came to Krishna consciousness. And she's a really serious devotee, and she has 4 children. So once she became a devotee, all 4 of her children became a devotee. And her husband was really not into Krishna consciousness at all. You know, he's just like, forget it. You know, it wasn't his thing. But then, it's like, his wife was a devotee, all four of his kids were devotees, and they're singing Krishna songs all around him. You know, it was like this, when they were doing dramas, when they're doing plays, they're the Krishna conscious plays, and he had to, you know, his kids, you know, they're doing a play, he had to come to the temple and watch these dramas. And so it's just like he was bombarded. And then finally, his wife played some sort of, you know, sort of talked him into, kind of tricked him into buying a house right in front of the temple. Every morning, he's waking up. Not only does he, you know, his family's devotees, but every morning when he walks out the door, the temple's right in front of him. And ultimately, he just had to become a devotee. You know, it's just like he didn't have a choice yet to, you know, become surrender. So like this, you know, that bhagya or that fortune can actually be made by the desire of a devotee. That can actually be made. It can actually be produced by the strong desire of a devotee. And that's why in every person's life, and in all of our lives, we'll see that our Krishna consciousness is generally when a very powerful devotee or a very determined devotee becomes determined to save us, to pull us out, to take us. So that is all of us. That role can be made by every devotee. Because otherwise, we may ask, you know, what's the need of preaching? Right? If everyone is, and what's the anxiety? What's our anxiety to preach? Because you know, some devotees, they say this, they, when they make a devotee, right, someone makes a devotee, and they say, oh, if I didn't make a devotee, then someone else would have made a devotee. It's not actually true. It's not completely true. Because if this was an automatic process, always, you know, that someone gets the highest credit, and then if he gets a certain amount, then he has to, then Krishna will send him a devotee, then Krishna has no shortage of devotees in the spiritual world. Right? He can send now loads of devotees. So ultimately, that person will meet a devotee. And if he's meant to become a devotee, then he'll become a devotee. Right? He'll become pious, he'll meet a devotee, and because of that devotee, he'll become a devotee. But yet, that's true. That is the general case. That ultimately, that will happen. But we as devotees, what we can do is that we can expedite that process very quickly. We can actually you know, make someone come to Krishna more and more quickly. So therefore, it is, you could say, it is a very special thing to bring someone to Krishna consciousness. Because this is why Krishna said that one who spreads this mission, this knowledge is so dear. Because we're actually doing something that's beyond the norm. A devotee can actually, through his preaching, make someone fortunate and change. You know. So that is really up to our effort. You know, that's Krishna. Krishna has caused us mercy. Krishna has freedom. But he's given away that causeless mercy and that freedom to his living entities who are part and parcel of him. So that mercy is and that free will is manifest. Krishna's mercy manifests through his living entities. Okay, so, yes, and so then, once one is fortunate, or due to fortune, one receives the association of the spiritual master. Krishna, and they develop the seed of devotional service. Okay, so it's time to stop if anyone has any comments or questions.
You used the word rebellious when we turned away from Krishna, but isn't that also in our nature to be different from the crowd, you know, that brought us back to Krishna consciousness?
To be different from the crowd?
Yeah, our nature. Mm. Like some of us, they have a nature to be different from the rest. Mm. So, isn't that also?
Yes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says here that how, because Krishna is independent, we being part and parcel of him, we also have this independence in us. So, we have an independence in us. And actually, yeah, this is a good point, actually. We have independence and we all have our unique nature as well. So someone may ask, this question came to me many times, is that, you know, why did Krishna make me this way? That, you know, that I make this foolish mistake. I mean, 3/4 of the living entities in a spiritual world never make that mistake. So why did Krishna, in the first place, make me the soul, this way, so that I would make all these foolish mistakes? Well, the answer to that question is that Krishna didn't make us. Right? We don't believe in a creation like the Christian concept of creation, that God created it at a certain point. No, the soul is beingless, it's eternal. We are always who we are. We are a soul who has a particular nature, a particular personality. And so this is why we make this wrong decision of coming down, because this is who we are. This is our jiva svarup, nature, this soul. We made this choice not because Krishna created us this way, it's because this is who we are. So Krishna is the creator of us in the sense that without his mercy we can't exist. Everything is sustained by the Lord. He's always, all existence is based on the Lord. So if he removes his glance, everything disappears. But given that his glance is always there, this living entities have always been there. And we have a particular nature. So we want to be independent. We have our particular desires, our own nature. And so therefore, we make our decision of leaving Krishna. And according to our sincerity and good fortune and nature, at a certain point, we make this decision to come back to Krishna. So that's the meaning of free will. We have our free will.
Well, you mentioned how sometimes Krishna will give you special mercy, independent of the living beings. Can the living entity thereafter reject that mercy? I mean, sometimes we see the government will give amnesty to criminals, but they may not lose their criminal tendency just by coming out of prison. So when Krishna gives that special mercy, are the cases where sometimes the living entity will reject that special mercy?
Yes, that's actually a very nice point. We have the example of Kali Krishna Das, who is in Chaitanya Chaitanya, who is Lord Chaitanya's personal servant. Kali Krishna Das. And he was someone who was a very appropriate example of that. That he, not only did he receive Lord Chaitanya's mercy, his empowerment, that others, they just saw Lord Chaitanya and they were dancing with tears of love in their eyes. But he was in constant association with Lord Chaitanya. He was Lord Chaitanya's personal servant. And at a certain point, he decided to leave Lord Chaitanya's service and go to these tantric, people, these like very demonic people. So that is actually an example of how one can, even in a close association of the Lord, which is our situation in the spiritual world, we're in constant contact with Krishna. Even in that association, we can turn away from Krishna because we have free will and we have our particular nature.
But if you just focus on what you said in my book, you said everyone who comes to the temple, everyone who comes in the temple is special, not just the devotees but also the guests.
Yes, exactly. Because they're special either because they receive special mercy from a devotee, some devotee pulled them in, or they're very pious. Only bhagya, they have great fortune. Piety, because only after many thousands and millions of lifetimes of pious activities does one actually, like performing yajnas or doing charity or, just activities in the mode of goodness, that one gets the inspiration to come to the temple of the Lord, to see the Lord. So yes, that's why any devotee, this is Prabhupada's vision also, he said every devotee is so special, even though they may seem very ordinary they're very exalted, because only after great pious activities does one actually come to the point that one wants to directly serve Krishna, and directly render service unto him. Because, there's so many other classes of people who are, they're into good works and all these things, but very few actually come to the Lord. For shelter.
Srimad Chakravarti Thakur states in his Vaishnava Toshin Srimad Bhagavatam commentary that even that the devotees are so special, and those that come to the temple are so special. Why? Because even the demigods are envious of their birth, because the demigods can come to the material world and spread Krishna consciousness or give the mercy of the Lord directly, like the entity can.
I see. Yes. Yeah, that's why a few weeks ago we were reading actually that section in the fifth canto. It describes how even the demigods, you know, pray for birth as a human being, because as a human being we have a much greater chance of meeting a devotee and easier chance of going back to Godhead. Yes. But also one more point on your point, that when we say that, well, if someone like Gauri Krishnadas can leave the association of Lord Chaitanya, then isn't it just out of free will? Then isn't it that at any point in the spiritual life we can just leave Krishna? So what's our surety? What will ensure that we won't make this mistake? So even though the souls will never fall from the spiritual world, they're perfect, they're pure. It's not a necessity. In other words, even in this mature world, we have the example that there's many people who don't need to make a mistake in order to not make a mistake. Like, they're still pure. In other words, you don't have to make a mistake in order to become fully purified. No, some living entities, they never make a mistake, they're always pure. But once a devotee, once a person falls in the mature world, then after that experience, we won't make that mistake. So that's where you could say experience plays a good role, in the sense that even though both those who don't have the experience in the material world or those who do are both perfect, but once we fall into the material world and once we make that mistake and we go back to Krishna, then we won't make that mistake again because we've learned our lesson. We receive that experience. And Srila Prabhupada says that the experience of the mature world stays in the mind of the devotee like a faint dream. You know, when you wake up and you've experienced a very bad dream, you don't remember the details of it. But you remember, oh, this was a bad dream. I don't want it again. I never want to make that mistake again. So in the same way, once we go back to the spiritual world, obviously we won't remember, we don't want to remember all the things of the mature world. But we say we never want to go back to the mature world. And why would we make that choice in the first place? Why, if a living entity is fully satisfied in Krishna's service, everything is perfect and pure and wonderful in the spiritual world, why would we make that choice to fall in the mature world to begin with? That Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a few of our Srila Swami, they all say that's causeless. There's no reason for that. That's the meaning of free will. Why did Kali Krishna decide to choose to leave the Lord? That's free will. That's the meaning of free will. It's free. There's no cause to it. It's just we make that choice. It's our misfortune. But once we learn our lesson, we will never make it again.
And also, when you're in the spiritual, you decide to come down, and you have no experience of how bad it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because there you feel really free and everything. I think that is all going with you.
Right.
But it's quite a different case when you drive here.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. When we're in the spiritual world, we're probably not conscious of the material world, like you're saying. So our initial mistake is not that we're attracted to the material world, that, you know, we're attracted to Maya, because Maya is not present there. Our mistake initially is that we turn away from Krishna. We develop a competitive attitude toward Krishna. Because Krishna is in the center of everything in the spiritual world. So we start to become envious of him and say, I should be in the center. And then as soon as we do that, then Maya really catches us. And then we get the full experience of it.
Pause. There is a concept of sophisticated crudeness.
Mm.
And that concept is you make an artwork and there is some imperfection in it.
Mm.
And you leave that imperfection.
Yes.
Because there is a sense that without imperfection, the artwork looks more beautiful.
Yes.
So in the same way, I understand that the perfection of Krishna is that he has given us free will. In other words, that Krishna always challenges himself. He likes that. To try and outdo himself and create a problem that he can't solve. So by giving the soul free will, so to speak, because we've always had free will, and the possibility to choose to turn against him, he also creates the possibility for us to go back to him and to serve perfection through imperfection. So in other words, perfection would not be perfect unless there was some imperfection there that asserts that even more eloquently.
Yes.
If you follow.
Yes. Yes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the moon looks so much more beautiful in the background of the night in darkness. So in the same way, like you're saying, Krishna's pastimes, the spiritual world, all these things, they shine more brilliantly with the background, you could say, of the material world. Because then, you know, then there's a contrast, there's a choice. So that definitely is better. That's not the reason why we come to the material world, because it's not just for aesthetic reasons that we have to suffer so much. We come because free will is necessary for love. So Krishna, this is what it means to be a living being, to have free will and choice. So Krishna gives us this choice, but like you were saying, that Krishna sees this as a greater, that giving us free will is a better good. Giving us free will and allowing us to suffer for some time is a better situation than a situation where we're always enjoying, we're perfect in the spiritual world, but there's no free will. So that option is there. Either you have a perfect world with no free will, no one makes wrong mistake, or you have a world with free will, and we make wrong mistake, we have to suffer because of that sometimes, but then there's freedom, there's love, there's this contrast. Okay, thank you very much. Shri Chaitanya says something.